College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
No football this week, but maybe one of the most important weeks of the season. Early signing period begins this Wednesday. Today's episode of the College Football Podcast is brought to you by Allstate. We've been telling you all season, but want to remind you again, mayhem could always show up on your turf, just like it showed up all throughout the college football season and in the college football playoff rankings. We're talking recruiting today, and recruiting is one way that teams try to protect themselves from mayhem. Don't let mayhem show up on your turf. Get better protected with Allstate. And I mentioned the early signing period begins this Wednesday, 72-hour window for many of the big names to make their commitment. Ahead, college football national recruiting coordinator Craig Halbert will join us here on the College Football Podcast. But first, Tom Luganville, college football analyst and national recruiting director for ESPN, joining us here on the College Football Podcast with Herb Street and Pollock. Lugs, this is year three of the early signing period in December. At first, coaches were leery about it. The season just ended, getting ready for bowl games. Now this week is looked at completely differently. How would you compare this Wednesday to what we see in early February?
Well, I think you could probably remove the term early when we talk about early signing period. Essentially, this has become the signing period. I'm starting to call the first Wednesday in February residual signing period because it's for what's left on the board. And when you look at the first two iterations of this, Kevin, you know, you had roughly 72% of the class in the 2018 class signed during this 72-hour window. Last year, that number bumped up to about 76%. And when you consider there's roughly 2,200 players that are going to sign an FBS letter of intent in one single class, that doesn't leave a lot left on the board in the month of January. So, you know, group of five schools, lower tier power five schools really make up a lot of ground in the month of January. But this has become all about the premier players. 260 players out of the ESPN 300 a year ago signed during this 72-hour window.
Why are they signing so early? What's behind that?
I really think that they're done. They're just done with the process. They're ready to move on. So many of these kids now have become early enrollees and want to be able to get on campus, to get entrenched in the program. They've been recruited for so long over the course of sometimes two and a half, 3 years, that when they've gotten to the point where they're just, they know and they're done with the whole thing, you don't need to wait for another 6-7 weeks. And the college programs certainly don't want to have to babysit during that time. That's not benefiting anybody. Where I think that you have your greatest challenges when it comes to the early signing period is the kids that have really enjoyed the process and maybe haven't been verbally committed for 2, 4, 8 months, what have you. They're the ones you got to worry about. They're the ones that can be lured. They're the ones that kind of respond to the overtures from other programs. But it's really meant and intended for those guys that know where they want to go, made their verbal commitment, are firm in that commitment, and are ready to put pen to paper.
Let's talk a little bit about this class. What are the positions of strength in your mind?
For me, it starts on the defensive side of the football, particularly in the defensive front. Kevin, I think there's four premium positions in football, and it doesn't matter what level you're at. You're in the offensive line, the defensive line, quarterback, and defensive cornerback. And when you look at our rankings, and we may differ from some of the internet outlets, but we're going to place a higher premium on the defensive line and in the offensive line. And that's why you'll see guys like Desmond Evan, Miles Murphy, Brian Brisee, Jordan Birch. You know, that's four players right there that all rank within the top five overall of the ESPN 300, and they all play in the same position. If you round out, let's just say the rest of the top 10, top 15, you've got other guys like Chris Braswell, outside linebackers Justin Flo and Savelle Smalls. These are all front seven players. And when you look at the common denominator of what it takes to build a championship caliber team, when you look at Clemson, you look at Ohio State, you look at Alabama, and you see what's happened over the last, let's just say, 7 years of national champion, that's how those teams are built from the inside out.
All right, let's take a closer look at the teams here, because Mario Cristobal in Oregon made some big-time noise last year with their class,
yeah,
led by the number one player in the ESPN 300 list, defensive end Kayvon Thibodeau, and he kind of stole them in USC territory there in California. Which coach and which program has surprised you so far?
Well, certainly it was Oregon a year ago. There's no doubt about that. I think for my money, who it is going to be, it might end up being Herm Edwards at Arizona State. They've got an opportunity to build off of what was a remarkable 2019 recruiting class. They're going to have several starters back off of a pretty successful second-year campaign, and they're still in on the Justin Flo recruitment as they're battling Georgia and they're battling Clemson and some of these other big dogs from outside the footprint. But for whatever reason, Arizona State seems to be resonating with kids, particularly in the state of California. Herm Edwards made such a concerted effort to get into that state, especially why USC and UCLA have been down. It's just the perfect time. So I really like Arizona State in that role to be a team that I think could gain some ground at the end of this 72-hour period.
They get Jaden Daniels last year, and it seemed like they got 10 quarterbacks last year
in
Herm's first full recruiting class. Pretty remarkable stuff. Which fan base do you think is going to have some questions here afterwards and say, well, what are we doing? What's the direction? Where are we going?
You know what? That's a very interesting question. I think it's probably going to fall onto the lap of Mike Norvell. And I say that, and it's not fair to necessarily say that about Florida State, because you have a new coach, a new brand, a new attitude, a new approach. But this is also a program that has not signed a quarterback. Now, let this sink in, Kevin. Has not signed a quarterback in 2 years. Florida State, all right? Now, I think they're going to sign one on Wednesday. And I think that they're going to continue to grow. But the fan base for Florida State, they need to see an influx of offensive linemen. They need to see quarterback improvement if they are to believe that this was the right choice and that Florida State is going to be trending upward and moving in the right direction. So I think the jury's still out in terms of not only the ground Florida State can gain between now and Friday, but the ground that they're going to gain in January, because they're still going to have a lot on the board. And Florida State fans want to see results in recruiting to give them a light at the end of the tunnel.
Keep this in mind, too. What, a year ago they had Sam Howell, and he decommitted, and then, he's
right.
The star for North Carolina's class with Mac Brown and what he's done in his freshman season, 35 touchdowns. Didn't Florida State just lose a commit just in the last week named Jeff Sims?
Yeah, they did, and now they're looking at getting another quarterback commit, swing him and Tate Rodemaker from the state of Georgia, and so hopefully they're looking to swap one for one. And I'll tell you another team, too, that if you're a fan of this team, you've got to be concerned, and not so much with what's happening right now, but how this could impact the future, and that's the USC Trojans. I understand committing to Clay Helton, but when you come out and you phrase the commitment to Clay Helton as saying our coach is going to return for the 2020 season, that does not bode well on the recruiting trail, because you're not giving any type of long-term solution. So what are those coaches supposed to do? What are they supposed to do now? What are they supposed to do moving forward? And this is a USC class that doesn't currently rank within our top 40 classes in college football right now. It comes to recruiting 2 days away from the signing day.
Lugs, how does that happen? And I understand the instability and the negative recruiting that goes on, but you are USC.
I know.
I mean, it to me, it's just the name of USC, regardless of the coach. And I'm stunned by that, where you're not in the top 40. I understand the instability with Clay Helton all season long, and then, you give basically the ammunition to all the other coaches when you don't make a full commitment past 2020.
Yeah.
But for them not to be in the top 40, that's a shock.
It is. And, Kevin, what's even more shocking is out of the 10 verbal commitments they have, only two of them are 4 stars, in our opinion. Everybody else is a 3-star level player. They have very few players that we look at and say, okay, I think of USC football for the last 30 years, and I think of dominant offensive line play, dominant defensive line play, teams that can match up against anybody. And I also think of a program, and you talk to college coaches, especially those who coach in the Pac-12 or the old Pac-10, and they'll tell you if there's a great player on the West Coast, it was SC's guy to lose. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think with what Oregon has done, with what Washington has done, what Arizona State's attempting to do, what Utah has now done, the tide has turned, and SC's got to get back on track.
All right, so we're talking about blue chip programs when it comes to USC and Florida State. You brought up Norvell. How do new coaches in higher profile programs do on that short notice? And I'm bringing up like Norvell, like Lane sure. Kiffin, where you're making the jump. Do you see a common thing where they take the kids that they had at the program that they were before and they try to swing those guys to say, hey, come with us, we're going up a little bit higher? Or is Lane trying to get the guys that committed already, you know, to Matt Luke and now trying to hold on? How's that play out with the new coaches taking over on this short notice?
Well, I think it's a little sprinkling of all of those things that you mentioned. The number one, it's a complete rat race. I mean, you are up against it. You're on an airplane. You're in a hotel room. You're in a rental car, and you're just trying to go out and introduce yourself. And you're trying to go out and get face to face with these kids. All the while, you are evaluating them to see if they're guys that you actually want to keep in the fold. So you got to evaluate and investigate in a very short period of time. You've got to acknowledge that there are going to be misses. I mean, there are real challenges inherent here. I think the most important thing to acknowledge are two things. Do the best you can with what you have in front of you. Get into the two and a half week dead period that's going to come right after signing period here, where you can get your staff settled in, take a breath, and then start to lay down the blueprint for the month of January, because you're going to be able to gain more ground. You'll know who everybody else has. You'll know who's left over. And then what you generally are going to see with new coaches is, are they necessarily going to be judged upon what they do right now with a class that they weren't really responsible with for recruiting the last 2 years? It's not likely. So what you'll see is you'll see the biggest turnaround or the biggest uptick generally in the first full calendar year, which then would be moving forward for the 2021 class. And I think that's what you kind of got to. You got to look at, you got to see that light at the end of the tunnel while you're doing the very best job you can with this current set of circumstances.
I mentioned defensive end Kayvon Thibodeau. We saw his impact, especially late in the year in that Oregon line. Yeah. Is there a player in this year's class that you think could have an immediate impact their freshman season?
Yeah, I think there's a couple I'm going to give you. Julian Fleming, the wide receiver, verbally committed to Ohio State, he's a difference maker, Kevin. He's the type of player that can come in and change an offense from a skill perspective. I think he's going to be a really exciting guy to look at as a true freshman going forward. I think Eric Gilbert, the tight end, 6'6", 255 pounder out of Georgia that LSU was able to lure to Baton Rouge, is a guy that's going to be a scary target and a big one at that in that new look LSU offense. I also think that there's going to be quite a few players at the running back position. I think Chris Tyree, verbally committed to Notre Dame, is going to be the ultimate of scat back types that can really create some mismatches. So that's just a handful of some guys. And then a lot of people, I'll finish with this one, are expecting, based upon the notion that we may think that Tua Tagovailoa is not coming back to school, Bryce Young, the verbally committed quarterback out of Mater Dei in Southern California, committed to Alabama. A lot of people are expecting that he'll come in, make a push, be a competitive improvement, and maybe be the guy at Alabama. Time will tell. It's a steep learning curve, but he certainly has the physical makeup.
Yeah, and that, we're talking about a young man that's USC's backyard, right? And he was a commit to USC, and then he made the switch to Bama. How would you assess what Bama's done, especially with the mindset with quarterbacks? Because, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, they're dominating, of course, on the skill players, and you're getting the running backs, and you're getting the defensive line, the linebackers. And now it seems to be the destination for quarterbacks because of this offense.
Well, I really think it took Nick Saban, it took him some time to realize, boy, I am sick and tired of having to defend these guys, and these guys that can run around and they can create and extend plays. Why don't we go get one? Why don't we become more dynamic? Why don't we become more spread-based? It doesn't mean that we have to abandon the run. It doesn't have to mean we abandon being a physical football team, which is what the foundation of the program is built upon. It just means we're more dynamic, and being more dynamic is more attractive because it's become a spread-space game where the quarterback's going to be utilized with his arm and his legs. And now Alabama, as opposed to, let's just say, when my broadcast partner Greg McElroy played there, they are viewed differently. And perception is everything in recruiting, and I think that's really helped them on the recruiting trail. And by the way, winning national championships doesn't hurt either.
That, yeah, that helps a little bit too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also the transition, because this young man that we're talking about, Bryce, I mean, he's a dual threat quarterback. We've seen dual threat quarterbacks succeed so well through the years in college football, but with the success of Lamar Jackson and then what we've seen from some other quarterbacks like Kyler Murray, like, you know, Russell Wilson and this transition and Baker Mayfield, guys that can be a dual threat and use their legs. How has that changed recruiting on the college level where major targets are becoming more valued?
Well, I think the number one thing that's changed more than anything as it relates to that position is, you know, the 5'11", 6-foot quarterback was not considered a viable commodity even 15 years ago, you know, and even more so if you go beyond that. Now I think with the shotgun-based spread offenses where everything's spread out, the players can see the field better, you're moving the launch point, you're moving the pocket, you're incorporating the zone read, and you're saying, okay, well, we're going to trade maybe that 6'4", 225-pound, pure drop-back, prototypical passer frame for a smaller version of it that it's a much better athlete. And what they're doing now is they're saying, okay, we'll trade 3 inches for foot speed and quickness and the ability to extend plays. I mean, it's a nightmare coaching defense in college football right now. I don't know why anybody wants to do it. You can't tackle. You can't practice it. The quarterbacks are almost impossible to defend. And so at the high school level, you're seeing more and more spread principles. You're seeing more teams go to the best athlete on their team. Let's go put him at quarterback and see what he does. You know, a Derek King is a prime example of that. 10 years ago, Derek King, the wide receiver. And now that's changed the game, and it's made it very difficult for defenses to keep up.
Well, you mentioned Derek King, and there was a lot of rumors about potentially him transferring, you know, when he decided that he wants to use this as a redshirt season at Houston. Let's just transition into this conversation because it is the elephant in the room, and we've seen transfers before, but the transfer portal continues to expand. I mean, UConn's with 20-plus players, but, I mean, multiple. I mean, Stanford has double-digit players. What kind of impact has the transfer portal had on recruiting now in December?
Significant, to the point where programs are now studying the transfer portal and studying the players and the tape of those players no differently than they examine an upcoming sophomore, junior, or a rising junior into his senior season. They're very curious about what the eligibility is left. There's a lot of film that you can evaluate with many of these guys. You're getting an older player. You're getting a seasoned player. Particularly at the line of scrimmage, you're seeing more and more coaches wanting to get into the transfer portal market because you just can't find enough of those guys. They're not growing on trees or standing on street corners the way wide receivers are. So I think what you're starting to see between this signing period and the first Wednesday in February, you're seeing some scholarships and some choices being withheld to move into the spring and summer months to try and research that type of player that could come into your program and help you. I mean, it has changed everything in recruiting to that point. Now, keep in mind, too, I think the myth about the transfer portal is that everybody says, okay, well, we can just jump in there. I'm not happy where I'm at. I'm going to jump in there. I'm going to go somewhere else. There have been over 1,100 players that have entered into the transfer portal. Less than 10% have signed somewhere else. Well, why is that? Because there aren't available scholarships. You got to have a scholarship to sign the player. So players that are in that transfer portal need to be very, very careful understanding what the landscape is out there and make sure they're not getting onto the other side of the fence where they think the grass is greener and it's not.
You know, I got to admit, Lugs, I still play, you know, NCAA 2014. And the reason why I still play it is because I love recruiting. I'm in this dynasty at 2040 and I'm into recruiting. To me, it's, I don't know. To me, it's taken me back as a kid that was in college that loved the recruiting trail and loved following programs. For our audience here, I'm not expecting you to nail the projected top 10, but I want to hear about, Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Texas, Michigan, USC, we talked about in Florida, and how these blue bloods are doing so far. And you don't need to go team by team, but sure. Anything stand out with, you know, what Clemson's doing this year, what Notre Dame's doing, and of course the Buckeyes and Michigan and Texas now, considering what they're going through when they're makeover with the coaching staff?
So it's the usual suspects near the top. And I think one thing that you've got to point out, because this is the common denominator, this is the theme of the college football playoff participants, really for everybody outside, for the most part, of Oklahoma defensively. Right now, Clemson sits with 22 verbal commitments. All right. Six of the top seven are defensive linemen that all rank within the top two of their position nationally. So you're talking about a caliber of player at the most pivotal position that is dominating college football for college football playoff participants, and Clemson has become that destination. So, again, that's the reoccurring theme for how did Clemson get to this point? Those were their targets. It's no different than Alabama and Ohio State when they've had their best teams. I think Georgia has the most ground to gain in terms of between now and Friday, where they've got the most room. You're looking at a Texas A&M, a Michigan, a Penn State, an Auburn, even Texas, given where they are on the field in terms of production. They're recruiting 17 verbal commitments right now, but they're a top 10 program because of the caliber of those commitments. So I think what you've got to look at by the end of this week is who had available room and who was able to fill those holes with impact type players. That's how you move. That's how if you're up. You're in Oklahoma at 11, you jump to 7 by Friday. Who are some guys that could impact you, particularly on defense, where you have to have some difference makers so that you can close that gap and win a college football playoff game? That's how you jump on paper between now and Friday.
I mean, just I'm going in right now to the ESPN 300. I'm just looking at top defensive tackles. Three of the top four are Clemson. And then when you look at the top 24, you've got Alabama with four of them. It just shows right there. They understand that you're going to win big time games by having that type of talent on the front line. And you see, yeah. You see the normal guys, the Clemsons, the Georgias, the Florida Gators, you know, LSU, Penn State, Ohio State. And that's why we continue to see them so successful. But one thing that stands out is, I'm seeing Mack Brown here a few times when it comes to the defensive ends. Three of the top 25 defensive ends are committed to North Carolina. What kind of footprint is Mack Brown laying right now in Chapel Hill?
Well, he's trying to put a fence around this state, and that's what he was able to do the first time around. The state of North Carolina is really interesting in recruiting, Kevin, because it is an oversaturated state of university. Now, think about it. You have four Power Five schools within an hour of each other. You've got great group of five. You've got an upstart program at Charlotte. You've got a great program at App State. You've got East Carolina, and then you've got a wealth of FCS programs as well throughout the state. But it's not what I call an allegiance state. You know, in the state of Alabama, you come out of the womb, right, and you pick one, mm-hmm. All right, in football. You're either Alabama or you're Auburn. North Carolina's not like that. A lot of that has to do with the basketball and that side of it. So what I think Mack Brown's trying to do is give these kids a reason to not go to Clemson, not go to Alabama, not go to Virginia Tech, and some of these South Carolina, some of these other programs, and to stay home because there's some really good football being played and some top-level football players. I mean, you take a look at Desmond Evans, Miles Murphy, all right, and then you've got Kedrick Bingley-Jones. That's three defensive ends, two of them in the top 10, all three of them in the top 25 nationally, and they're all three out of the state of North Carolina. You keep those guys at home, all of a sudden you're turning your program into an entirely different animal.
Yeah, first thing he did was when he got the job was make sure he reached out to every high school guy in the state and try to, like you mentioned, build a fence around that because you're going to get infiltrated by all the SEC teams and as well as Clemson coming into that area. Lugs, always great to have you with us. I know the next couple of days are a little crazy for you, so we do appreciate you carving out some time here for us on the podcast.
You bet, man. Always a pleasure. Have a great week.
All right, let's keep this thing going. More recruiting talk on the other side with ESPN's College Football National Recruiting Coordinator, Craig Halbert. But first, let's hear from our sponsors, Allstate, AT&T, and Goodyear.
Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today.
Yeah, college football is great unless, of course, it's just okay. Like when students decide to paint their chest with different letters to spell some word, and then they stand together to get on TV, but they're spelling the word wrong, or they lined up in the wrong order. Sure, not everybody's an English major, and I get it. We can't all win the national spelling bee. But come on, people. You should know how to spell Wildcats or Bulldogs. The purpose isn't to have a word jumble in the student section to keep your mind sharp or something. Just okay is not okay, whether it's college football fans or your wireless network. You want to watch the best college football just like you want to go with AT&T, America's best network. Don't settle for typos on people's chests, and don't settle for anything less than the best wireless network. Get the best college football and get AT&T. Best network based on GWS One Score, September 2019.
Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven. Now back to the show.
And it's good to have college football national recruiting coordinator Craig Halbert joining us here on the podcast. Craig, by the end of this week, who do you think will have the number one recruiting class?
Well, Kevin, what has been interesting about this 2020 cycle is I don't remember since I've been doing this since 2005, there's ever been a more competitive race for the number one overall class. As we go into this early signing period, you can make a case for five different programs, either not by the end of this week, then by February and the national signing day, that first Wednesday in February, having the number one overall class. You have five teams currently kind of in the hunt. I think we're going to come out of this early signing period with likely Clemson having the number one overall class. They've got a really top heavy class, 3 5-stars, really doing a nice job along the defensive line. They're still in the mix for quite a few players, including 5-stars like the linebacker Justin Flo, the defensive end out of South Carolina, Jordan Birch. There's still some pieces there for Clemson. You can never count on Alabama. They're usually a fixture there in those first three spots. They're one program that still has a lot out there over the next few days to add some pieces to see if they can hold on to that number one spot. And then the other team is LSU, obviously coming off an outstanding year. When Ed Orgeron got that job, everybody knew that he would go in there and recruit well. They were just wondering how he would do as a head coach with on-field production. Now he's on the recruiting trail, marrying not only his ability as a recruiter, but also great success on the football field. And that's going to be really tough for them to stop. And they're another program in the mix for a guy like Jordan Birch, top five outside linebacker, Phillip Webb. So they're another program that can make a jump here in the next few days.
You mentioned three of the five. Who are the other two teams you think that could win this thing out?
The other one is Ohio State. Currently have the number one player in the nation committed. That's wide receiver Julian Fleming out of Pennsylvania. They're doing a really nice job. They're in the mix for one of the top remaining quarterbacks in the nation out of California, C.J. Stroud. So I think it'll be a little bit tougher for them, but they certainly have a chance. And then Georgia. Georgia's the one sitting there at number five, where they've got it, where they're in the mix for several players. Things could really get interesting over the next few weeks for them. Probably, I think I look at the boards for the teams in the top five with the most to gain in terms of volume, and it might be Alabama and Georgia. Georgia may be a little bit of a delayed reaction because there are some players that they are seem to be the favorite for, Kevin, that may not publicly announce until after the early signing period, kind of during that All-American Bowl stretch. So they may wait. So there may be a little bit of a delayed reaction, but they're in the market for quite a few top rated corners and defensive backs. And they're also in the mix there for one of the top tight ends in the nation, Darnell Washington out of Las Vegas. So I think Georgia's kind of the one sitting back who may be a little bit too far out to get to number one, but could certainly push back into that top three.
Okay, which teams outside the top five could make a move? And I'm saying, let's just talk about teams in the top 20 that you think could make a big, big push by the end of the week.
I think the interesting one to watch is the Pac-12 is kind of struggling a bit, but there's two teams that are running away with it. That's Oregon and Washington. For me, I think that one of the programs to watch is Oregon. I was just talking about Justin Flo. He's a player that had kind of for a long time been rumored to be a heavy lean towards Clemson. But now that as we're getting towards the stretch here for the start of the early signing period on Wednesday, and Justin Flo will be announcing during the ESPN coverage, he now seems to be a strong lean towards Oregon. So for the Ducks a year ago to go into California and get Calvin Thibodeau, the talented defensive end, and potentially now go back to California again and get the number one rated linebacker in Justin Flo, that's looking really good. And you get an impact type defender like him, that can really help you boost up towards the top 10. And they also had one of the top remaining quarterbacks on a visit this past weekend, Robbie Ashford. He's at a Hoover High School in Alabama, with a longtime Ole Miss commit, but with the switch there in the coaching staff, he decommitted, was just on an official visit, so he could add some more depth. So I think Oregon's one team to watch. And the other one is Tennessee. They were a program who a year ago really closed strong on the recruiting trail during that February period, jumped right to the cusp of the top 10. I think that they're not going to have quite the same impact in terms of the big names, but I think there's still a lot out there for them. If you remember, season got off really rough there for Tennessee in September, but they were able to close with a string of wins and head out in the recruiting trail. And I could see them adding three or four quality kind of four-star prospects to that class and probably bumping up a little bit more towards the top 15.
Let's get back to the Oregon question, because again, we had Lugs on earlier and we talked a little bit about Mario Cristobal and how he went to Southern California and he basically took Thibodeau right outside the USC backyard. And if he gets, the player you're talking about here, in the next couple of days, what is Cristobal doing so well when it comes to recruiting these guys?
I think it's a blend of things, Kevin. I had one Pac-12, personnel person tell me when they were talking about Mario Cristobal, they said he's relentless. It's like the guy doesn't sleep. He may be one of the top and probably one of the hardest working recruiting head coaches of all of college football. So you got a guy who's had a reputation and is a very strong recruiter, has put together a good staff for that. And then you just go back to what Oregon's been able to do slowly over the years, from Mike Bellotti to Chip Kelly. They had a little bit of a down period, but this is a program that offers a lot in the surrounding type areas in terms of gear, swag, the kind of the persona that they've had with a different type of uniform. So they've always kind of been able to build a national persona with what they offer in those type of bells and whistles. And then they've always been in these last few years near the top of the Pac-12, battling for Pac-12 supremacy. So you've got on-field success, you got the things like the uniforms, and you got a head coach who's an outstanding recruiter. You put all those pieces together, coupled with a Pac-12 South right now that is very much down, and it's a great opportunity for Oregon to rise.
Is there a player on Wednesday, or let's just say, Thursday or Friday, because of the 72-hour window, who is the wild card? The kid that everybody isn't sure is going to make an announcement, but could kind of turn things around and shift some momentum?
The guy that I think that is going to make an announcement, kind of tweak your question a little bit. I don't know of anybody who's going to come out of the woodwork and say they hadn't announced, but a guy that I think is really intriguing is actually the top rated guy left in the country. And that is defensive end Jordan Birch out of Hammond High School in South Carolina. Number five player to ESPN 300. He was going to initially announce on Tuesday, the 19th. Now it looks like he's going to get it done on the 18th, the opening day on Wednesday. Clemson in-state, South Carolina seems to still be kind of hanging around in the mix. LSU has seemed to be a program very much in the mix for him. Then he just went and visited Georgia, so now there's a lot of momentum building for the Bulldogs there. So you've got a player, Jordan Birch, who I think you if you went around and talked to different people, you may get four different answers on where he may wind up. So I think he, going into this early signing period of guys expected to announce, I think he right now is probably the most intriguing in terms of an impact type player, with several teams may tell you that, hey, we think we got a real good shot at this guy, but only one of them obviously is going to get him.
Craig, where is, you know, and it's stunning. We're about 35 minutes into the podcast. We haven't talked about Jim Harbaugh in Michigan, especially when, you know, a couple years ago, Harbaugh made a ton of waves about sleeping over at a recruit's house and finding a way to make sure that he was committed to these kids. Where's Michigan right now?
You know, it is. You're correct, because there's not that same type of buzz there was when he first got there. But they're kind of sneakily doing a solid job. I mean, they're at number nine. You know, if you ask Michigan fans, is that enough for you to be at number nine in the class rankings? It's a top 10 class nationally. That's pretty good. But you're right. It doesn't seem to kind of come with the same flash that it was a few years ago. And then when your biggest rival, Ohio State, is sitting within the top five with potentially a shot at the number one class, that makes that gap seem even bigger. So I think, you know, listen, you're talking about these major programs. We mentioned all the names: Alabama, LSU, Ohio State, Georgia. You know, Michigan has not had the same on-field success that those programs have. So when you are kind of dealing in rarefied air with the upper-tier programs, it's much more difficult to kind of go into a living room and talk to a recruit and sell potential and kind of a format for what you think can get you to success when you're competing against programs that are sitting in those same living rooms, so those five-star, high four-star prospects, and they're not talking about a blueprint for success. They're actually talking about real success, if you follow what I'm saying. They're saying, we've been on the field, we've played for conference championships, we've been in a college football playoff, where Michigan hasn't been able to get over that hump into that area. So when you're talking about the elite prospects and you're battling against those other top programs where they've had the success to sell and you're still trying to sell the blueprint to get there, it could be really difficult.
Yeah, and I think you can make the case, too, where you've got about 15 fan bases that consider they're a top five program. And so when you only have five spots, you've got 10 fan bases that will not be happy regardless, because they all think in their own mind they should be in the top five. And that brings up programs like Texas, Florida, Penn State, Texas A&M, especially when you bring in Jimbo and you pay the money that you're paying him, Oklahoma and Notre Dame. When I mention those programs, anything stand out in how they're handling this week?
I think what is most interesting about that is you talk about those kind of historic type programs, Kevin, and the one I don't think you didn't mention was USC. Did you say USC?
Yeah, so I didn't mention USC because earlier in the podcast, Luges and I talked about them being on the outside of a top 40 recruiting class, which, Craig, you could even expand on that. It is stunning, and I understand the doubt of Clay Helton, and I understand the status. But, I mean, you're USC. It doesn't matter who's the coach. You're coming to USC because it's USC, especially in Southern California.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so just to piggyback on that and what Luges said is that, you know, listen, it's unbelievable that you're talking about a historic program. If you remember about 10 years ago, or maybe even a little bit less, they went through those NCAA sanctions that were pretty tough. And even through that, they still owned Southern California. They still owned recruiting in the Pac-12. Now you're looking, going into this week, of the top 10 players in the state of California, not one of them is committed to USC, with three of those 10 uncommitted and probably none of them a strong lean to USC. So we can come out of this early signing period without the Trojans having signed not one top 10 player within the state of California, which is really kind of mind blowing and kind of setting up a bigger gap between them and that Pac-12 North, with Oregon and Washington leading the way. So of those historic programs and one of those teams you would think no matter what can weather the storm, it's very surprising to see USC to really be struggling to this point. And even with the struggles they had and whether Clay Helton would stay or not, for them to be at this point, it's really kind of going to be an uphill climb for a program that at the very least was able to close strong, but at this point really struggling in state. And the SEC and the ACC in particular, Clemson, really benefiting from that kind of West Coast exodus.
Yeah, you have programs like Bama and Clemson and Ohio State that they recruit nationally. They don't go state to state. We're a destination for anybody from anywhere. You know, another program that was like that, and Luke's and I touched a little bit on this, was Florida State. Many years ago, they could go anywhere and pluck a kid from California and suddenly he's in the backfield. And now Mike Norvell has this challenge where he has, you know, less than 2 weeks to assemble a class. And now he's trying to figure out the quarterback situation. And we talked about Jeff Sims decommitting from Florida State. What's Norvell facing here in trying to find a quarterback with a program that hasn't recruited a quarterback in a couple of years, or at least brought in a quarterback in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, this is talking about USC and the now Florida State, Kevin. I think what it shows you is that the job that somebody like a Nick Saban is doing at Alabama with the consistency that he is recruiting at is really unprecedented, because you think about some of these programs with so much history and that have been dominant on the recruiting trail that it can happen to anybody, that you could fall off and really struggle. There's no more give-me's anymore on the recruiting trail, USC being one and Florida State being the other. You're right. The last two cycles, they did not sign a quarterback. And then they had Jeff Sims decommit. Now, they did go out and just pick one up and Tate Rodmaker out of Valdosta, Georgia, one of the more winning programs in that state. I believe he was a South Florida commit prior to that, decommitted. But so they got a quarterback. But you could very much argue with what they've been unable to sign that they should probably try to bring in two in this class, if nothing else, for bodies, because you can, I know there's been some successful college football transfers, like Justin Fields and Jalen Hurts, but you, in my opinion, you cannot live on just bringing in grad transfers and other transfers at the quarterback position. You've got to bring in a young quarterback. You've got to develop them within your program. And that is where they have really struggled. Now, of all the classes that are being taken over, with the exception of Washington, where there was just kind of a change of the guard there, but we're talking about where a coach has been fired, Norvell's probably taking over the best base of a class. They're still in the top 25. They still have six ESPN 300 commits. They've had a lot of defections, but there's still a solid base there that if he can maintain this group and add a few pieces, it won't be too bad, especially in the ACC, where it's really kind of Clemson and then everybody else. Florida State could still be towards the top of that conference and not lose a lot of ground. But I think if you're looking at Florida State, I do not think that's a fixed quick program. With some of the struggles they've had along the offensive line and now really at the quarterback position. And Rodmaker is a talented young man, but I don't necessarily know if he's a step-in, plug-and-play type guy at the quarterback position. So there's still a lot of questions and a long way to go. But if there's anything working in Florida State's favor, is that the ACC, in terms of recruiting, is not very strong, and he is taking over a solid class.
No, and we want to preach patience, because if you look at Norvell's track record, he does a great job bringing in playmakers, a quarterback, and then defensive line. So just give it time. We'll see how this plays out when he gets his first full year in Tallahassee. Craig, we know it's a crazy time. We appreciate you joining us here on the podcast as we get ready for Wednesday.
Anytime. Enjoy it. Have a great week.
Want to thank Luges and Craig for joining us. I love Wednesday. I actually think the National Signing Day, at least the early period, as Luges made a reference, is now the signing days, is a ton of fun. I think every fan base gets a little bit of a spark during that lull before the bowl season. I want to thank our sponsors, Allstate, AT&T, and Goodyear. Excellent work from our producer, Taylor Schwenk. If you enjoy this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Of course, remember to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. We definitely appreciate it. Don't forget, you've got to check out ESPN Daily. It's a Football Monday with Mina Kimes as she takes a look at the Buffalo Bills, who have quickly built themselves into a contender. Also, Spygate Part 2. What happened exactly? What does it mean? And how does the NFL respond? All of that on today's edition of ESPN Daily. Check that out. Our next podcast coming up this week, cannot wait. Chris Fowler is going to join us, the original host of Game Day and now the voice of Saturday Night Football on ABC in primetime. I cannot wait to talk about his journey at ESPN. Also, what the state of college football is like for him. He just hosted the Heisman. Plenty of conversation with Chris. His stuff on Instagram is a must see every single weekend because he tapes video segments and commentary. And we're going to get the full effect here on the podcast with us the next time we're on. Until then, enjoy.